Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Damage Report. I'm John Arola. It's Friday. And no, I'm not going to wait. Go to him. This is Brenner Lick.
Sorry, I just made myself laugh so
hard. Don't give any more details about what made you laugh. This is a serious daily analysis of what's going on in this country and indeed around the world. We're going to stick with that.
I'm usually happy this is a live
anyway,
show, Brenner Lick, but right now I'm just not.
Brenner Lick is the host of the Happy Half Hour, but that's really no excuse. He's going to be joining me throughout this hour, in which we're going to be covering the rapidly shifting federal judiciary. We're going to be going to the Democratic primary. We've got two different ads, one from Joe Biden, one from a Senate candidate who has an ad where he is being shot at by his Republican opponent. I'm not kidding. That's what the premise of the video is.
I love this ad.
It's something.
It's
and
a good
then
ad.
We're going to talk about Hillary Clinton still out there, still talking about the 2016 election. She has a beef with one person. Let's find out who it is a little bit later on.
Good tease.
Yeah, I don't want to get more specific than that. And especially because either you won't watch or I'll just get mad. So I don't want either of those things. But with that, and with Brett having composed himself, thank you, Brett.
Yeah,
why don't we launch into our first big
made
story?
Made myself comfortable.
We're going to proceed. Donald Trump has gotten another one of his Senate picks approved by the Senate. In a near party line vote Tuesday, the Senate approved the nomination of Sarah Pitlick, making the conservative lawyer the newest federal judge for the U.S. District Court in St. Louis. Senator Susan Collins joined the Democrats to oppose Pitlick. Every other Republican present voted for her. So what is noteworthy about this individual, aside from the fact that she is very conservative, and we'll give you some examples of exactly how, I would say, even out of step with regular Republicans, she is. But what's interesting is that Pitlick is the latest of Trump's nominees to receive a not qualified rating from the American Bar Association. That's something that used to matter, but doesn't anymore. It's long reviewed the competence of nominees for the federal bench. It will no longer be needed. In a September 24th letter to lawmakers, William Hubbard, the chair of the ABA's Standing Committee on the Federal Judiciary, wrote that Pitlick's, quote, experience to date has a very substantial gap, namely the absence of any trial or even real litigation experience. He goes on to say, Ms. Pitlick has never tried a case as lead or co-counsel, whether civil or criminal. She has never examined a witness. Though Ms. Pitlick has argued one case in a court of appeals, she has not taken a deposition. She has not argued any motion in a state or federal trial court. She has never picked a jury. She has never participated at any stage of a criminal matter. She has never, even while watching Law and Order, sort of opined about how she thought the episode would end. She really has no idea how any of it works. And they did their job in pointing that out with specifics, but it doesn't matter because the Republicans are going to support Donald Trump's nominee.
She has no firsthand experience in any of this. And I say that this is extremely important, not only with judge appointees from the president, but also with like district attorneys who are running. Like there are a lot of district attorneys, particularly on the liberal side, who are running with absolutely no trial experience. And so they're pitching a bunch of like generic ideas about decarceration with no real hands-on experience of how to make that happen. And then you also have, you need people there who have actually done it. Right now, this is an appointee of a judge who is like, well, I've never really flown a plane before. It's like having a pilot. It's like, I've never really flown a plane before, but I saw the movie Flight. And I had Windows Flight Simulator in like 95.
That would be pretty good.
Also, I've hung out with some really accomplished pilots and written reports on their flights for them. That's job was.
So the part of that analogy that you're alluding to is the fact that she was a clerk for Judge Kavanaugh. So, I mean, that's experience.
But that's it, but it won't matter.
Really fast, I will say, I get what you're saying. I would argue that I understand the general principle between DAs running without prior. I would say they are operating at different levels of the judicial system.
Well, one's also
the DA
voted
is just about at the bottom. Yes, and if you're in the Supreme Court, it is literally the highest level you can possibly
be. But district attorney, like any, there are
it's like, well, really fast. It's like people who are running for city council without any previous, you know, governing experience versus someone like who wants to be president without any literal experience about how bureaucracy or the government works.
It's just going to be super weird that she is going to walk into the court, sit down as a judge, never having done anything remotely like this before.
Yeah. And that, again, This and there's like occasionally I will have like a ghost whisper in my ear. It's the ghost of John Arola of 2010 who was like, there are standards for things, and I want to be like, go away, ghost. You're out of it's not your world
anymore.
You're
out of touch.
They were the ones who supposedly cared about this.
No, what do you
mean? Experience being qualified, that's supposed to matter to Republicans.
No,
they would have you believe it in the past.
No, babies not being aborted matters to Republicans, and not just as a matter of principle, as a matter of winning elections.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
This is them delivering on a promise to voters.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few that they can deliver on. The two promises to voters that Mitch McConnell has ensured the president delivers on is.
I know what they are.
What are they?
No, you tell me.
No, you tell me.
It's gonna be tax cuts and judges.
Done.
Yes.
100%, and that's it. And one of the two people, it's not just Mitch McConnell, but in the House side, Paul Ryan. They delivered the tax cut. Paul Ryan's like, Mitch has got these judges things. I'm gonna go take a vacation, then lobby.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And those are the only deliverables that needed, frankly, to be delivered. In order for me to be afraid about the prospects of Donald Trump running next cycle.
Well, and if you're afraid now, wait until you get to a couple more graphics into this. But first, a little bit more on Sarah Pitlick. In addition to not being qualified for any of this, there are reasons to worry about how she will, you know, how she will be a justice on the Supreme Court. In a filing, she asserted that the practice of surrogacy has grave effects on society, such as diminished respect for motherhood and the unique mother-child bond.
That is insanity.
That was one of the worst subplots of the second season of Handmaid's Tale, I think. The attack on surrogacy. She has also argued that surrogacy is harmful to mothers and children, and is a practice society should not be enforcing. Those are quotes. Her position that states should treat embryos like humans would likely outlaw abortion, in vitro fertilization, and surrogacy. They're trying to stop surrogate mothers.
Yeah.
That is multiple steps beyond where they have been on this issue. You have to go back to like the 50s.
I mean, this.
Which they are trying to do, I guess.
Being skeptical, as a very friendly way to say this, of surrogacy has like trappings of like literal witch trials in it. You know, like, oh, it's so weird. This isn't your baby inside you, it's someone else's baby. That goes against law and order, God's plan.
Yeah.
It's just so insane. It's so insane, but that's it. But
gross.
And especially with the judiciary, that is supposed to be the branch that doesn't care about what party is in power.
Yeah.
But
to be really clear, I want to say it is gross to be weirded out by it as a judge, not to do
yes,
it. That's
it is
totally
it is
normal
disgusting,
and good.
But like this is supposed to be the impartial judge.
Yeah.
Justice is blind, but the justices are being pushed in and farmed. It's like minor league baseball. They have a farm system.
Yeah.
They are training judges and they take the people that they know have written certain things, maybe in law school, as opposed to having like a dynamite fastball. They find someone who wrote something like this in law school and say, all right, you're on track. We'll put you with Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh was on track before you, and you'll just move up through that.
Yeah, like here's the thing. Let's fast forward to 2023. You don't think they'll try to put her on the Supreme Court? I'm not saying that they will. They've got other crazies they can go to. But you think the fact that she has no experience, she's the only thing they know her for is having written crazy things about things that shouldn't even be being debated? She could end up being a Supreme Court justice. And I want to zoom out a little bit because I said that this would get scarier, and it will get scarier. Sarah Pitlick as a federal judge is a scary prospect. That one judge. But she will not just be one judge that Trump has picked. As Sahil Kapoor tweeted, the Senate confirmed 8 new federal judges just this week, bringing Donald Trump's total to 170. That's 120 on district courts, 48 on circuit courts, 2 on the Supreme Court. Nearly all are in their 40s or 50s with lifetime appointments and position to shape American law for generations. By the way, he's only, that 170 is those 3 levels. There are many other sorts of courts that he's gotten too. But bear in mind, just with those 3 levels, Donald Trump has now picked about 1 in every 5 American federal judges. In the first 3 years, he has picked 20% of every federal judge you could find yourself going before. He's still got another year. He might have 4 or more after that. I mean, this is a devastating effect that he projects out into the future. Even if someday the Filezo fish catch up to him, you're gonna have, you know, in 12 years, President AOC's legislation potentially being knocked down because of Donald Trump picked federal judges and Supreme Court judges.
So factor that in when you go to vote.
Please always do. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, a judge is gonna be here. No, a guest is gonna be here on the other side.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We're all across the country obviously worried about election security, the ability for our democratic rights to actually mean something in practice, and there are various forms of influence over our elections, both in terms of domestic political spending, but also foreign political spending that we are growing increasingly worried about. And joining us now to break down one proposal that would help to solve some of these problems, Ron Fine, legal director for Free Speech for People, joins us now on the Damage Report.
Hi, it's a pleasure to join you.
We're glad to have you here, Ron. And so talk to me about a proposal that you're backing. You've got a write-up on it that people could get some details from that has to do with foreign influenced corporations and political spending.
That's right. So when people think of foreign influence in our elections, they may first leap to something like the Kremlin with clandestine intelligence services directly trying to interfere, and that certainly can happen. But a more subtle form occurs when foreign investors use US corporations, use their ownership stakes in those companies to leverage the corporate treasury and their influence over it in political spending. And that's something that comes out of the Citizens United decision that the Supreme Court issued in 2010. But our legislation aims to cut back on that to the extent that we can under that decision.
So I want to get into some of the components of the legislation. But first, when you talk about these foreign influence corporations, I want to get an idea of the scope of the problem. So how common is this that corporations, like, are we talking about dozens of corporations, hundreds, thousands of corporations? And how big are some of these corporations in terms of their impact on the overall American economy and the politics of certain states?
You know, the extreme cases are those where a corporation might be wholly owned by a foreign government. But there's a much larger, if more subtle, problem, which is that in our large multinational corporations, most of them have a small but significant percentage of foreign investment. And while it may not seem like a small ownership stake could have a big influence on corporate governance, it turns out that owning even 1% of corporate stock in a Fortune 500 corporation, it gives an investor substantial influence over what that corporation does. So when you think of foreign influenced corporations, don't just think of those where it might be that the Saudi government owns a major stake, but just think of virtually every S&P 500 company has a percentage of foreign ownership that in some cases, even with just a few percent, is enough that they can influence the corporate governance and how they spend money on elections.
And so that's the current situation. So now talk to me about the legislation. What would it seek to do to change this situation?
So the legislation has two main parts. One of them is to define a foreign influenced corporation as one that has a percentage of foreign investment as small as 1% from a single foreign investor, and say that those cannot spend any money at all in Seattle city elections. And that includes spending it directly or giving it to a super PAC. The other component of the legislation says that nobody, corporation or otherwise, can give more than $5,000 to a super PAC. And these work independently, but when you put them together, they offer a powerful rebuke to some of the recent corporate political activity that we've seen in Seattle just this last election.
So my team did a little bit of research into those Seattle, the city council elections. And generally, when I think about those sorts of local elections, I think that these are, you know, there's probably not a ton of voter interest. There's probably not a lot of money being spent. But in 2019, $13 million was raised just for city council elections in Seattle. That seems like a lot. Why so much interest on the part of these super PACs, the corporations that are funding them, for the outcome of these Seattle City Council elections?
Well, it was a remarkable pace of corporate political spending in Seattle that outstripped anything that had been seen before. And a lot of it was driven by Amazon as a result of some recent proposals that the city council had, in one case, enacted in order to reduce the power and influence of Amazon and other companies, which have the ability right now to really dictate living conditions in Seattle, but try to avoid as much as possible paying for any of their impacts on the city. So whether you support those particular policies or not is not the issue. The issue is that Amazon decided that it was going to try to unseat the entire city council and dumped $1.5 million into a super PAC to do exactly that.
Wow. And I would predict that as this process goes forward for this legislation, you'll probably face some opposition from the same sorts of interests. I know that you helped to draft this type of ordinance in St. Petersburg, Florida. What was that process like?
Well, in St. Petersburg, which has already passed an ordinance like this in late 2017, there was some opposition, both from some members of the public and also on the city council. But the larger body of the public, many of whom were extremely active in coming to city council meetings and letting their voices be heard, were very clear and very strong that they wanted the elections in St. Petersburg to be for the people of St. Petersburg and not to be driven by large donations from wealthy and corporate interests.
So if people would like more information about the scope of the problem and what you're planning to do to help solve it, where can they get more information on that?
We have a website, freespeechforpeople.org, and we have a nice page that describes everything going on in the Seattle legislation and also broader efforts to challenge political spending and the unfair dominance of wealthy and corporate interests in our campaigns.
Ron Fine, thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
I want to take a short break here. When we come back, a couple of different campaign ads, one raising eyebrows, the other potentially a new line of attack against Donald Trump. We'll break those down after this. Eddie Morrow is a Democratic Senate candidate running against Joni Ernst that you're seeing in this picture, and he's got a campaign ad. Take a look.
Hi, my name is Eddie Morrow. I'm a progressive Democrat running for the United States Senate here in Iowa. One of the reasons I'm running, because our current Senator Joni Ernst, she thinks it's okay to run ads glorifying guns. She doesn't seem to care that many of those guns will be pointed at our kids, our teachers, churchgoers, moviegoers, concertgoers, our police officers. Well, I care. While she's afraid to stand up to the NRA for common sense gun laws, I'm ready to stand up for Iowans to keep our schools, our communities, our kids safe. But this race is about more than guns. Joni's term has been a nonstop assault on Iowan's right, on our right to affordable health care, on a woman's right to choose, on workers' rights and farmers' rights, and our kids' right to a livable planet. And by standing by her boss in the White House, it's been a nonstop assault on our climate, on our democracy, on decency, and what it means to be an American.
So it goes on for about a minute more. There are more shots fired. He was shocked to find out. He talks a bit more about his platform and everything. Initial reactions, but Ehrlich?
I love this ad.
Yeah.
But I also love terrible local race ads. I even statewide. Well,
it's a Senate race.
It's a federal race, but it's a statewide Senate race.
Yeah.
Iowa represents, I don't know how many people live in Iowa, like a couple hundred thousand. Millions, I don't know, but
probably millions.
Yeah, it's gotta be. Sorry, my bad. More on the focus of local ads. Just go and find my. I made a video a long time ago about local ads. Mm-hmm. The one that you see of Joni Ernst, by the way, the rest of that one is way more ridiculous.
Oh, we've got
than
it.
Moro's. Oh, I'd love to
oh,
see
I've
it.
Oh, I've got it. Okay, so I have thoughts, obviously, but I want to catch you up because that is using footage from a 2014 ad called Shot. From Joni Ernst, here is, I believe this is the entire ad.
She's not your typical candidate. Conservative Joni Ernst, mom, farm girl, and a lieutenant colonel who carries more than just lipstick in her purse. Joni Ernst will take aim at wasteful spending. And once she sets her sights on Obamacare, Joni's gonna unload. Oh, and one more thing. Joni doesn't miss much.
Give me a shot. I'm Joni Ernst, and I approve this message.
So,
just know that in political ads, your capability of doing the job is directly related to how dangerous your mode of transportation is. That's why she rides a motorcycle.
More importantly, the accuracy you have with handguns.
Yeah, I mean, give me a shot. She complained about this ad. Mm-hmm. I don't know, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I've got
I'm getting way ahead of you.
Team Joni on Twitter said, it's outrageous and offensive that Eddie J. Morrow would make light of gun violence in order to help his campaign. He should be ashamed, and this disgusting ad should be taken down immediately.
What do you mean make light of gun violence? You said give me a shot.
And she kept shooting at things. Like, she's gonna take aim at Obamacare. So, like this legislation that gives people health care, she's gonna shoot it to pieces?
She is the one making light of gun violence. He is the one pointing out that these things have consequences. And when you shoot a bullet from a gun, it hits something.
Yeah, I like that his ad seems to play on the she can't aim. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting take. Look, her ad is way worse. I probably wouldn't have made his ad. I get that like it went viral, we're covering it, all that. That's what you need to do. There's a lot of political violence in our country. I don't need to see a candidate implying that their opponent is trying to murder them. And by the way, that's almost certainly going to happen in the near future. So let's not take some of the bite out of it by implying it when it doesn't exist.
Well, he's not, yeah. Ideally, you want an ad to go viral without a lot of people going, this is a little crazy.
Yeah, and look, the Twitter response, I mean, not that you should judge by that, but it wasn't positive.
I think it's an effective ad.
Okay.
I think the concepts of what's happening make it effective, but the version of effect, it could be more effective if it didn't have people going like, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's other ways to get your point across in advertisements.
He's right to point out that she put out the objectively worse ad. Any Dem watching this is probably gonna see the Joni Ernst ad and say, yeah, I hate it. I hated it back in 2014. But like, if you're a Republican, just imagine if you saw that sort of ad in any other political system. Like if you saw that someone was running in Egypt and they had an ad where they just started like tearing into something with a gun. Like if you saw that, so like you know that you hate that imagery elsewhere, but you think it's cool and makes you tough when you do it here. And not just Joni Ernst. You can't run as a Republican these days without shooting up some stack of papers.
Yeah,
they all do, or including cooking bacon on it.
As a Republican, Joe Manchin did it.
Oh, did he?
In
really?
One of his ads, he shoots.
Stop shooting legislation.
Shoot Obamacare too. I think he
stop
did.
Shooting books. Read books. Stop shooting them. Like honestly, read a bill rather than gunning it down.
The current governor of Georgia made multiple ads with guns in them. Oh. One in which he had a shotgun draped over his lap as he was joking about shooting a kid who was trying to date his daughter.
Yeah.
And this wasn't in 2014. This was in 2000 and what is it? Fifth or you know,
it was last
2017,
year?
Late yeah. 2017.
Yeah.
And early 2018.
Yeah, because the idea is that his daughter is his property and he'll murder any guy who touches her, I guess. Here's the thing. I know he was joking. It's one thing if it's like Will Ferrell and SNL joking about with the shotgun or something. That's kind of funny. You're joking about it. But you also actually believe those things. You have an incredibly old school, weird, racist, patriarchal worldview. And you're joking about it, but you actually believe those things, which makes it less funny.
Yeah, but this is the challenge for you, like, and me and everyone, which is how do you call that out in an effective way?
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between calling it out just using the proper words that characterize the move,
mm-hmm.
which is good for people who like to think and analyze, but there needs to be some effective way to call it out using I guess just trappings of political theater in order to have a better rhetorical stance. And this I respect as an attempt to do that. Because
okay.
and it gets people talking about it, which I know is not reason enough for it to become news.
Yeah.
As we would want news to function. But I do think that this is an interesting, compelling attempt. And I liked it. Also, it was like really well done. Like
it was
had higher
well.
Production value than Joni's.
Yeah. There's a bit of No Country for Old Men in it.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Anyway, it's supposed to be a conversation starter, so let's have that conversation. Everybody tweet to Eddie Morrow to come on the show. I think he actually follows me. I could probably do it, but you should tweet. It'll save me some time.
I like Morrow for let's tomorrow, talk about it. By the way. Morrow
yeah, that's
for tomorrow.
Not bad. That's a good not bad.
One. I like you. John doesn't seem to.
I got no issues. Anyway, let's transition to another ad, okay? We're going from the Senate to the presidential race. Donald Trump recently found himself the laughing stock of some of his international counterparts, and Joe Biden is now using this in a new ad. Take a look at this, and we'll give you our thoughts on the new strategy.
World leaders caught on camera laughing about President Trump. Several world leaders mocking President Trump.
They're laughing at him.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
World leaders mocking and ridiculing him for being completely off balance.
Allies are deeply worried about it. They say he's becoming increasingly isolated. Something is very wrong.
The world sees Trump for what he is, insincere, ill-informed, corrupt, dangerously incompetent, and incapable, in my view, of world leadership. And if we give Donald Trump four more years, we'll have a great deal of difficulty if ever being able to recover America's standing in the world and our capacity to bring nations together.
Yeah, the respect that the world has for Joe Biden might start to fall apart with the finger sucking and the corn pop and stuff like that.
So
but
what is so the finger sucking, by the way? That's not fair.
The finger sucking
is absolutely not fair, and I don't think it
absolutely
helped.
Not fair.
Finger sucking? He went like this to his wife who had the hand in his finger mm-hmm. in his face. He just went like that. Did you watch the video?
You're saying it's not weird at all.
I think it's playful and people's relate. I think your opinion of Joe Biden colors your interpretation
if
of that
you're
interaction.
Implying that I am even 1% biased against Joe Biden, you know me. Anyway, yes. But
I think no. Let me
you're
just
right
put it,
because it's the only thing that's happened with Joe Biden
like
that's weird.
But that's
it
the thing,
was
it's
just
like you
normal
lose credibility
politics,
when you do that.
And then all of a sudden the finger thing happened.
Listen,
that's one of the more normal things he's done on the campaign.
But you're
trail.
Right about corn pop. You're right about leg hair. You're right about you cannot go into it.
The leg hair.
But like
the leg
it's
hair.
It's in the same
the corn pop,
corn pop thing.
Okay,
he
yes.
says that black kids used to come and play with his leg hair and jump in his lap, and he liked it.
Okay,
but
you're also, making the case better than I did.
But also, yeah,
so
you cannot walk into a Dunkin' Donuts without having a slight Indian accent. End quote, Joe Biden. Like those kinds of things.
Hey, have him hear
stand
that
up.
One.
Look at that guy stand up. Oh, that's right. He's paralyzed. Can't have him stand up. Oh, wow.
I didn't hear that.
These
one.
Are all Joe Biden moments where people have laughed at Joe Biden.
Yes.
That's where it doesn't hold together.
Okay. So, but I'm curious because the thing is, obviously, I'm not a Joe Biden supporter. Do you think this ad succeeds? And if so, in what area, if not all areas?
It succeeds in that it points out that people are laughing at Trump. Not only that, but it also shows the reasons why they should be laughing at Trump.
Yes, it does. Now, does it? Do you think it's effective in stimulating Democrats to like support Biden because he's pointing out that they laugh at Trump? Do you think that that will win over any Trump supporters? That it's like, oh, this guy that we thought would be our savior is a laughingstock.
I don't think this hurts in trying to win over Trump supporters.
Yeah.
I don't think this hurts. I think it's just like, hey, see for yourself, look for yourself. You see all this stuff happening. Yeah. I think that there's two kinds of Trump supporters in my mind that I'm concerned with. One is the blind support who just think he's a tough guy. And the others who are like, I'm paying lower taxes and my 401k is doing fine. So I literally don't give a rip about anything else.
So you think with the first group, maybe it helps a little bit?
First group might be like, people who like went to Trump rallies because he was in town and they wanted to see it, the spectacle. Those folks might be susceptible, not the ones that Emma interviews with the bullhorns, like those people are
who have turned their car into a wall at the border, and perhaps not. Maybe. I think, look, one of the things that frustrates me about the ad is that it's just another piece of evidence that Joe Biden is going to run that as a campaign, not based on policy. He's just not. And and that's frustrating.
I think the winning strategy for someone in the Democratic field is to have progressive policies, and when they feel the need that they need to become more of a moderate, to become more electable, realize that moderate voters do not care as much about policies. Progressive voters do. Keep your policies progressive, and if you feel the need to moderate, then just be rhetorical, use your rhetoric. Because the moderate voters just want to see a video like that, hear the violin music, hear Joe Biden saying a coherent sentence. Like this, what I learned from this is Joe Biden can make that ad, and in debates, he should just have a soundboard with pre-recorded responses.
that would be a good call. And I know that it's obviously playing into the fact that Donald Trump has said literally 100 times or more that Obama was being laughed at and he's going to change that. I get that. You all know that. The one other thing, and maybe this is like picking hairs or something, but at the end when Joe Biden said splitting hairs, well, you pick it first, then you split it. Did you not know the first part of the metaphor?
No, it's from a different part of the country.
Anyway, so he says if Trump gets 4 more years, then it's going to be really difficult to re-blah, blah, or blah, blah. I hate that sort of thing. And maybe it's splitting hairs. This is not a game where it's gonna be tougher in 4 years. Those 4 years matter. It's not just about what we're left with and what we have to recover from, is the damage that is done in those 4 years. Stop thinking about elections as a thing where I have a strategy and you know what? We'll see what happens in 4 or 8 years. No, today matters. Tomorrow matters. There are some issues that you cannot come back from. When you despoil nature, you can't undespoil it. When you wreck our climate, it's gonna take hundreds or thousands of years to repair. All of this stuff is not a game. I play games. I know what games are. This isn't one of them. Every day matters.
I agree.
So we'll see if this is just one ad that happened to line up with the news cycle or if this is his strategy going forward. We'll find out. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, the economy after this. Donald Trump got elected saying that he would be the politician who, unlike the establishment Democrats and Republicans, got what was really going on for regular Americans who've been left behind by the economy. And yet, the disconnect between the experience of working class Americans and their new president still seems pretty wide. And you can see it every time Donald Trump talks about the economy from the point of view of a very wealthy person. For instance, today he tweeted, stock markets up record numbers. For this year alone, Dow up, that's almost 19%. S&P up 25% or 24 if you round down. NASDAQ up almost 30. It's the economy, stupid. But what you just talked about is not the economy, stupid. You talked about the stock market, stupid, which is a part of the economy, but not necessarily the part of the economy that for the vast majority of working Americans, they care most about. And we've got some numbers to back that up.
Well, there used to be a time, I assume, there used to be a time when the performance of the stock market was an indicator of the overall health of companies and how well companies were doing. And there was a more direct relationship between the growth of companies and economies and the strength of unions and the strength of growth of wages for the people that worked for those companies. But the stock market now and the strength of companies are over here. And the way workers for those companies enjoy the benefits of all that is a completely different game.
It's loosely connected, if at all.
Because the shareholders are the ones that are the beneficiaries of the economy. And those shareholders are more are less and less affiliated with those companies in any tangible way.
Yeah.
So the benefits of the stock market don't go to the people who work for them. And then you feel like you can tout all this job growth and the jobs that are being created are not good.
Yeah.
The reason the there's so much job growth is because people have to have more than one job in order to get by.
Yeah. Well, and I would say at least, like you're talking there about him talking about job growth. I would say that's at least a step closer to the experience of actual working people. But he doesn't talk about jobs nearly as much as he talks about the stock market. He recently said, I don't even follow the stock market, and yet he has tweeted about it hundreds of times. And here's the thing, and this will be a lesson, a bit of education for Donald Trump. Nearly two-thirds of Americans say this year's record-setting Wall Street rally has had little or no impact on their personal finances. 39% said stock market performance had a very strong or somewhat strong impact. So some people are doing well when the stock market does well. I would make the prediction that they're the sort of people that would be doing okay even without a big stock market rally. The sort of people who are not affected by stocks going up are the ones who most need financial help.
Issue I'd say is like pension funds are related to the stock market, and so if you
and pensions are becoming rarer and rarer with every passing year,
and precisely because of the financialization of our economy, which is like the reason I say like even the health of companies isn't necessarily related to stock prices, because a healthy company can be dissolved in an instant if it makes sense. Just watch that AOC clip about private equity. People just be like, nah, we're just gonna tear it up and get rid of it because it makes more financial sense to the stockholders to eliminate these jobs and this company completely.
Exactly. And just a little bit more survey data. The survey suggested most Americans are not aware of market movements, with just 40% of respondents correctly saying the stock market had increased in value in 2019. And can you really blame them? Why would a regular American who doesn't have any stock, I think what they say, 10% of Americans own over half of all the stocks in America?
Yeah,
if you don't own any stocks, and there's a good chance you don't, why would you have any attention whatsoever to what's going on there? And yet that's what he's talking about when he talks about the economy. Because although he convinced millions of Americans that he spoke for them, he's a New York billionaire who only knows millionaires and billionaires. And so the stock market, that is what matters to them. They don't care about what wages are at. They barely care about inflation. They care about the stock market. That's about it.
Yeah, and it's tough because you have, when it comes to the suburban family voter, as much as I hate to talk about them, like this is something that they're like, you know, when you hear people like Bernie Sanders say, I want to fight for people I don't know, that is someone who might be willing to take more of a step for the concept of justice than someone who's like, yeah, but my 401k is pretty good right now. And I don't want, Elizabeth Warren seems to be like pretty against stock market stuff. So is Bernie Sanders. Like that's the scary moment for me with the stock market. Like immediately, if there is a Democrat at all elected, there will be a downturn in the stock market. Whether it's tenable and or whether it lasts very long is up for debate. But like that's a very real thing when you say like, and that'll really suck for 10% of people, but I just am so terrified about the general economy as it exists now that like it's gonna suck, but there's gonna have to be massive adjustments in the way it's set up in order for it to be healthy in the long term. And that's why I'm so angry at Trump, and I'm angry about the fact that people have voted for Trump, because it would completely without any question lead to something like this, where what he's done over the last 3 years is to just inject like bull adrenaline into the stock market. And of course it's gonna go big, because he just got rid of all taxes on all corporations. And of course right now it's on as much cocaine as Trump was originally built from in the early 80s. That's most of his body is just residual cocaine that got struck by lightning and came to life.
That'd be a good cartoon.
Please get to this Rand Paul thing. We have to.
Okay, so really fast, another area of disconnect between the actual experience of people who are struggling in this economy and Republicans who are your saviors. Rand Paul tweeted this: excited to announce my plan to help alleviate student loan debt. The Helper Act would allow individuals to use money from their 401k or IRA to pay for college or to pay back student loan debt. Watch the video to learn more.
It's insane.
I put together a tweet. I didn't send it, but I think it was: excited to announce my plan to help alleviate child hunger. The Hamburger Helper Act would allow individuals to eat their dinner earlier in the day. Watch the video to learn more.
I mean, like he says, if the way to get rid of debt is to take money from your 401k and pay for your debt. So his solution to not having money is to have money.
Yeah. The people who are crushed under student loan debt, I'm going to argue, have not been able to contribute a lot to their 401k over the last few years. And even if they were, even if bizarrely you could stash away a bunch of money in your 401k, but you weren't able to make a dent in your student loan debt, taking young people who are struggling financially, stripping their 401k down to nothing, and delaying the process where they start saving for their retirement by 5 or 10 or 20 years is a guarantee of more senior poverty decades in the future. That's the literal worst financial situation you could set up for a person, is to tell them, sure, save for your retirement, but wait until you're 45 to start doing it. That is idiotic.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, we're gonna take one last break. We come back. Hillary Clinton has some views on Bernie Sanders. We'll go over it after this. Got a video for you of Hillary Clinton. I want you to bear in mind this video comes from just a couple of days ago, and it is December of 2019, and yet Hillary Clinton still talking about Bernie Sanders.
Do you mean the Mueller report?
Yeah, the indictments.
Okay.
The report itself, I think, is also worth reading. But if you read the indictments, you know, basically, they were like, hey, let's do everything we can to elect Donald Trump. I mean, those are quotes.
Those are
taken,
words they
those
said.
Those are words that taken, and they also said Bernie Sanders, but you know, that's another for another day.
Do we hate Bernie Sanders?
What?
Do we hate Bernie Sanders?
No, I don't hate anybody.
Bernie could have endorsed you quicker after you beat him.
He hurt me. There's no doubt about it. He hurt me. But going back to the indictments, because that's what's really important.
Have you ever spoken to Bernie about that?
No, no.
You don't talk to him?
I don't talk to him. I mean, we did when he finally endorsed me and all that.
But you're upset with him?
No, disappointed. Disappointed. Okay. So, and I hope he doesn't do it again to whoever gets the nomination.
Right.
Once is enough. We have to.
Everyone unite.
We have to join forces.
So that little comment about, I hope he doesn't do it again to whoever gets the nomination, is a petty little dig. That, I think, is the appropriate description of it. And not as the person I go to for political analysis said, Hillary Clinton absolutely destroyed Bernie Sanders in her Howard Stern interview. Chris Cillizza, you animated hot dog of a man.
Today he has an article that says Trump now has clear path to reelection, and it's this jobs numbers report.
He probably makes $1 million a year.
Yeah.
Anyway,
also have a Harry Enten guy. What the hell?
The little bit of credit that I will give to Hillary Clinton there is, and I hadn't known this before, she makes the comment about Bernie Sanders, and then she says, let's go back to the Mueller report, and Howard Stern drags her back into it. That's the credit I'll give her. The needless digs at Bernie Sanders, her weird hindsight of what happened, that I don't give credit for.
I mean, she's ironically doing the same thing to this process that she's accusing Bernie of doing to the last process, which is just like, so
driving wedges,
driving wedges between parts of the Democratic electorate, and it's so transparent and sad. Like I do just want her to go away.
Yeah, so that
just go away. Like I you know, I feel like a damn Republican around here sometimes, but like in terms of my relative, like Hillary Clinton versus like Hillary Clinton.
Uh-huh.
But especially like during the last election. But like, but man, just go away. Just stop talking about this stuff. You're not helping in any possible way. No one wants to be reminded of what everyone went through. You're mischaracterizing what happened the last time around.
When he campaigned vigorously for you.
And yes, exactly.
And endorsed you in July. What do you want? You want him to endorse you in 2012? It was primary, hard
fought.
Did you want him to endorse you
while he was running against you?
Yeah.
And now she should be
mad.
How did Trump not endorse me either?
Exactly.
Like,
just please, 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 for your own sake, for our sake, for the Democrats' sake, for the eventual nominee's sake, for the American people's sake, please stop. I would love to stop having to cover Hillary Clinton. I would love to stop seeing other people cover Hillary Clinton, but that will not happen until she stops weighing in on the election. If you can help out behind the scenes, if you can eventually support Bernie Sanders, whoever the nominee is, do that to beat Donald Trump. But outside of that, you are not helping Hillary Clinton.
Jimmy Carter's building houses all over the world and he's 90. Find something like that.
That's good. It seems tough though. Thank you, Brett, as always. Everybody tune in to Happy Half Hour later today.
Emma
Vigeland.
Yep.
How exciting is that?
Very.
We'll see you Monday morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.